It's a pleasure to see everybody as we start the second in our five-part series of Rabbi Shvat and Orot HaTshuvah. And it's welcome and a pleasure to have you all. And we look forward to another fascinating shiur on the thought of Rav Kook as we get closer and closer to Rosh Hashanah. Bakasha, Rabbi, it's all yours.
Hey. Hello to everybody. Good to see you back. Quick review of what we saw last time. We saw that Rav Kook looks at tshuva not as repentance, but as returning. And he explains, based on modern science and the modern theory of evolution, which shook the world in Rav Kook's time a little beforehand, Rav Kook explains that the most natural thing in the world is to improve. And just like sports records we spoke about are constantly improving, and we gave five or six different reasons why, but all of the arrows are pointing in the same direction that it's inevitable to improve. And what Rav Kook is telling us is that even if you don't believe in Mashiach or you don't believe in redemption, it's logical and it's rational that the world is inevitably going to improve. And with ups and downs on the way, the general direction is improvement. And the ups and downs, the trial and error, is a preparation for the next rise. And just like cell phones are constantly improving, and advertisers know that shampoo and toothpaste should always be new and improved, the most natural thing in the world for me, for man, that we have free will, is to improve. And why is this so important? Because very often we think, I'm lazy, I talk lashon hara, I do wrong, things wrong, I'm selfish. And what Rav Kook is saying is that even if you made the same mistake 10 times, it's just a matter of time before eventually you learn from your mistakes and get it right. And that if I want to improve, I'm not swimming against nature, but I'm swimming with the tide. Also, I don't have to be embarrassed to change, because the most natural thing in the world is to improve. And that's what the amoebas are doing and the monkeys are doing. And how much more so man who has free will. We spoke about how this is also in the micro. And also on the macro, that also physical and also the spiritual, that thank God mankind has matured, just like the individual matures. So too mankind has grown out of slavery. And we know that racism is wrong. And we know that chauvinism is wrong. And we know that imperialism is wrong. And it's important to stress that there is an arrow at the top of this up and down process, but and therefore the world never is going to be perfect, but the idea is to strive for perfection. And the question for today is, if it's so natural to improve, why is it so difficult? And as we're going to talk about today, maybe we'll just first close up a couple of loose ends from the last topic. One thing that we didn't discuss, and again, I don't want to spend too much time on this, is that it's not just trial and error which drives us to improve. Curiosity drives man to improve. The desire for recognition, right? Adler. Psychology, we all want attention. We all want recognition. We want to impress our spouses. We want to impress the cheerleaders. All of these things drive a person, his ego, drive us to improve. That's what competition is about. That's what jealousy is about, that we want to always improve. And we see that this is not a small topic. That's what I want to begin with today. Let us see in the share screen. And here we go. Source number one, from Orot HaTshuva. Ruach HaTshuva, do you all see it? Ruach HaTshuva merachef ba'olam. The spirit of Teshuva. What is Teshuva? As we explained at the end of last year, Teshuva does not mean to repent. It's not just for sinners. It's not just for the religious, but is for everyone and for everything. And that is what? That is the spirit of return. Return to what? We saw last time Rav Kook is saying to return to my godly self, to return to God, to return to be who I want to be. That is the ultimate in return. And we'll talk a little about more of that today. But again, Ruach HaTshuva merachef ba'olam. The spirit of improvement is hovering around the world. This is the spirit to want to be godly, to want to return to God, to want to improve, that is giving the world its major drive for evolution. And that is the major topic of the essence, the tzivyon, the essence of the world. Ubereach besamav, with the fragrance, hu me'aden oto v'noten lo et kol kishron yofyo v'hadaro. All of the beauty, all of the talents, all of the hadar, that spiritual and physical beauty, it is all part of the same universal cosmic drive to improve. Point number two, source number two from Orot HaKodesh. Rav Kook writes as follows: Vayitkashrut ha'atzmit shebein ha'metziut ha'sichlit ha'ruchanit ha'atzmit uvein ha'itgalmut ha'chomrit. The connection between the spiritual and logical side and the physical side. Zeu davar muzbar ma'od shekol bal de'a makefet v'choderet yelech tamid le'ora. As we said last time, and this is a cloud that's found a lot in the Zohar and the Kabbalistic sources, that the physical world is here to help us understand the metaphysical world. And just like in the metaphysical world, if you want to throw, usually when Israelis see baseball for the first time and they see the pitcher winding up and bending back, and then throw, they don't understand what this whole dance is about. But anybody who knows football, baseball, we know that only after you wind up can you throw far. And even though the first step is to go back, this is what's called in Chazal Yirida Letzorech Aliyah. Just like when you want to shoot a gun, first you cock it back and then it can shoot. Just like a spring. The further down you press a spring, the higher it's going to jump. So somebody who doesn't I remember my daughter, little, we have four daughters, three sons. And my youngest daughter, she saw the older ones playing Chinese jump rope. And she wanted also to jump. And they said, no, you're too young. You don't know how to jump. And they stood her on the one side. You put Chinese jump rope on a chair, and on the other side, you put it on her feet. And she approaches the Chinese jump rope, and she doesn't know how to jump. And I saw that she was very frustrated. Finally, her sisters weren't home. She wanted to jump. And I taught her. I never thought of how you jump. We do it intuitively. First, you crouch your knees, you go down, and then you can jump. In other words, what Rav Kook is saying is that the physical world and the spiritual world are based on falling and rising, falling and rising, trial and error, but the general direction is consistently up. In source number three, Rav Kook gives another aspect of this. Ha'aliyot v'yiridot hin tadiriyot. Ups and downs, that's what life is about. And if you go to a hospital and you see a monitor, it's always going up and down, up and down. And if you ever see a flat line, that means the guy's dead, where the monitor is disconnected. In other words, life is about ups and downs. Also the micro, life is made of ups and downs. And you're meant to learn from your mistakes and to rise even higher. Also in the macro. As we said before, the general direction, though, is always up. To learn from your mistakes. Even if there is a very big fall on the individual or in mankind, Rav Kook says the laws of nature, the world, is based on the moon. Why do the Jewish people count according to the moon? According to Kabbalistic sources, this is the idea of you start small and then you become full and then you become small again and then full. And Rav Kook goes on and he says this is also the Zuto Shel Yam, Unasigato. The waves of the ocean, they come in, they go out. This constant movement, this dynamic movement, is that the world is alive. It's not stagnant. Oneshima pnimit. When a person breathes in, you inhale, you exhale. This in and out, the same thing with the heart. The heart, it contracts, it relaxes. The whole, all of life is based on this in-out process. Rav Kook goes on, O ha'erut v'hashena, sleeping as a preparation for having energy and having strength and being healthy when you're awake. So even though when you see a person sleep, it doesn't seem very instructive, doesn't seem very creative, seems like a waste of time. But Rav Kook is saying, Afal pi shem nir'im kehofachim, even those, these ideas look like opposites. That is how God created the world. And therefore, we have to be prepared for downs, just like we have to be prepared for ups. I teach in a couple of Midrashot course on the questions in Emunah. And inevitably, one of the questions that comes up every single year is, why do bad things happen to good people? And for anybody who's been around in the world, and I would say above the age of 30, 40, for sure 50, it's not even a question. Because you understand the world is not a rose garden. The world never was meant to be a straight line. The world is meant for there to be challenges and ups and downs. And that's what life is about. Source number four. In Yan HaDilugim. This is a fidush that we haven't spoken about before. Continual, right? We until now have been talking about the continuous evolution. As Darwin says that we're talking about hundreds of millions of years, there are also leaps in evolution. By the way, it's interesting. I teach 19 and 20 year olds, and you should know that the way we were taught evolution 40 years ago is different than the way they teach evolution today. And our evolution with Lamarck was different than Darwin's evolution. In other words, notice evolution is constantly undergoing evolution. And one of the points that is taught today in evolution is that it is not just straight gradual. But every now and then there are leaps. And Rav Kook writes about this also in Jewish history of how, for example, the Balfour Declaration was a leap. If Jewish history or the world in general may advance at this stage, then all of a sudden the pace quickens. 1948 was a jump. The Six-Day War was a jump. The Aliyah of 1.2 million Jews from the Soviet Union, that was a jump. Yes, Aliyah in general is gradual. There's the first Aliyah and the second Aliyah, the socialist Aliyah before the Holocaust, after the Holocaust, the Sephardic countries, little by little. But within the last century, there are also beefs. In the context of tshuva, by the way, you've probably noticed already that Rav Kook jumps back and forth between history, modern history, Jewish history, science, tshuva, and that's exactly the point. Everything, just like the geula that we have been witnessing for the last 100 years, it's a slow but sure process. And Am Hanetzach lo mifached miderech arukah, the eternal people is not scared of a long journey. Nevertheless, don't think that if it's been going at this pace, that that's going to continue. Because there are, just like in evolution, there are leaps every now and then. So too, there are leaps in Jewish history, and there are spiritual leaps as well. If a person wins a lottery, if a person was sick and gets better, if a person gets a great job, if a person meets a great spouse, we all know that in life, yes, life is slowly but surely, but there are also leaps. The same thing in the Beit Midrash. Whenever you're learning, whether it be Gemara, whether it be Jewish thought or philosophy, every now and then you come out of a class. I remember when I came out of the class that we learned last time, that we learned in Orot HaTshuva, I came out saying, wow, that's such an eye-opener. And for me, that was a leap. And different people have different leaps in their spirituality. And we should take advantage, seize the moment of these leaps, look for these leaps. Sometimes it could be a beautiful sunset. Barabu ma'asecha Hashem. Something like that is also part of my spiritual development. And like with everything, the more conscious you are of it, the more you can change the pace from going slow to going quickly. And that is also a very important point. Okay, now we get to the punchline of today. Again, if improvement is so natural, why is it so difficult? Let's look together in source 5. There, for those, you see it, I made it a little larger and with a yellow background, because this is the main seif that we're going to be learning today. Ha'akshanut, the stubbornness, la'amod tamid b'deya achat. We have a stubbornness to stay in one place. Ulitamech ba b'chevlei chatat shenasu l'minhak. I'll read it through and then we'll elaborate. Bein b'ma'asim bein b'deyot, ki machala haba mitoch shikua be'avdut kasha, she'ina menicha et or ha'chirut shel ha'tshuva la'ir bo'otzem chila, ki ha'tshuva hi shu'efet lechofesh mekori, amiti, shehu ha'chofesh ha'elohi, she'in imo shum avdut. Rav Kook, one of the central topics in his thought is the idea of chirut, chofesh. And you don't have to be a genius to understand why Rav Kook is a Zionist. Liyot am chofshi ba'artzenu, to be an independent people in our land. But today we're talking about the importance of the independence and the freedom of the individual. And that on the one hand, tshuva is so natural and built into the world. On the other hand, it's also built in to be a challenge and difficult. Otherwise, we wouldn't have free will. Now, let's analyze what is the difficulty here. Let's jump down to this. You don't have on the source sheets, but you can look together on the share screen. Rav Kook writes in his introduction to Rota Tshuva at the top of the page. Hatshuva, that's the topic. Ki mitzvat Hashem, shemitzad echad kala shebekalut. It is the commandment of God, which on the one hand is the easiest of the easy. Kalasha bakalot, like we've been saying, just do it. Sharei hirhur tshuva hu kvar tshuva. Chazal tell us in the Sechet Yoma that even if you just think for a second about tshuva, you've done tshuva. That's pretty easy. The Gemara in Masechet Kiddushin gives a bunch of nafkaminot, practical ramifications. Says, what if a person gives a pruta, a ring to a woman, and says, Hareat mekudeshet li, you are betrothed to be my wife on condition that I am a total tzaddik. And he's not a total tzaddik. The halacha is, and is brought in the Shulchan Aruch, they are man and wife. Because he's obviously giving the ring and saying, I want to be a total tzaddik. As soon as you thought, I want to be a total tzaddik, you are a perfectly righteous person. So it's the easiest of the easy. And it's natural. Umitzad echad, on the other hand, are a kasha shebakashot. It is the most difficult of the difficult. Shelo yatsa adayin alapoal b'milua be'olam uvachayim. That even after the world is, whether 6,000 or hundreds of millions years old, depending how you look at it, counting from Adam, counting from the beginning of creation, we still haven't achieved full teshuvah, full improvement. So on the one hand, it's easy. On the other hand, it's hard. I made a chart here. Usually, when I do this in classes, we have a discussion. But Zooms, I learned, is very difficult, unfortunately. Let's look at why tshuva is the easiest of the easy mitzvot. First of all, I'm basically a good person. I want to be good. I have a yitzer hatov. We spoke last time how we all want to be good. We don't always feel like it, but we want to be good. Also, the fact that God totally accepts anybody who wants to do tshuva. You want to improve? That's it. You're accepted. You're in the club. You don't have to pay entrance fee. You don't have to do some kind of passage or rites to get into the club. God accepts anybody who just says, yeah, I want to improve. Number three, even a thought, as we saw before, just a thought, a fleeting thought is considered tshuva. Okay, that's pretty easy. In addition, it's in my control, right? As opposed to nature, which took hundreds of millions of years to evolve and improve, I have free will. I can decide to change direction. I can decide to improve. I can decide to wake up for davening in the morning. I can decide to start going to classes, to learning Torah, or talk Lashon Hara. It's in my control. Nobody can stop me. In addition, even 1 minute can fix decades. In terms of the amount of time, even 1 second of tshuva can fix decades of sin and mistake. So that's pretty easy. Also, God waits a long time for tshuva before he punishes. Right? The Ramchal and Mesilat Yesharim stresses that part of Midat HaRachamim is that God doesn't send down bolts of lightning or opens up the ground to swallow us up as soon as we sin, as soon as we make a mistake. He has a lot of patience. He gives us a lot of time. And he gives us Rosh Hashanah and Chodesh Elul and Yom Kippur every single year. And again, so tshuva is pretty easy. On the other hand, why is it difficult? Let's look at the left hand, because we all fall and make mistakes. That's what the Yetzer Hara is about. That's what life is about. Nobody's perfect. Also, there's always room to improve. Even according to this evolution, with the ups and downs on the way, but the general direction is up, there's an arrow at the top, which means you still have more to improve. And then you still have more to improve. And there's always what to improve. So that's hard. In addition, it's hard to change habits. If a person is in the habit of smoking or biting their nails or speaking bad about other people or cursing when he's angry. It's hard to change habits. On the other hand, yeah, it's up to me. I can change and, you know, find myself every time I do something wrong or have somebody remind me and catch me and pay him 20 shekel every time I catches me talking lashon hara, right? Nevertheless, yeah, it's hard to change habits. That doesn't mean that it's impossible, but it's hard. In addition, we often repeat and fall and return to the previous place, right? Very often we see it's not a straight road, and that discourages us. In addition, people don't really believe we can fix it all. And that's the famous Gemara that tells us that they said to the Torah, what is the punishment of, I'm sorry, they said to the Navi, the prophet, what is the punishment of a sinner? Quotes a pasuk from the prophet and says a sinner should die. And then they asked wisdom and they said, what is the punishment of a sinner? And wisdom answered, the punishment of a sinner, he has to be punished. And then they asked God, what is the punishment of the sinner? God says, just improve and everything is forgiven. Now that is illogical. And that's why logic, when asked what happens to a sinner, logic says he should be punished. He is punished. But God says no, because just like, you know, it used to be difficult to understand, because if you killed a person, he's dead. You can't bring him back to life. And if you break something, you can't bring it back to life. Today, with computers, we can correct mistakes. On a tape recorder, we can correct mistakes. And that is a very important message of tshuva. Now, if we think about it, we see that on the one hand, tshuva is very challenging. You know what? Maybe let's look at some more character traits that make it difficult to improve. No, let me try this. I haven't tried it yet with the class participation on this Zoom with this group. Any suggestions? What are some character traits that prevent us from that natural improvement? What's holding us back?
Greed, depression, lack of emunah.
Okay, but let's focus now, all that is true, but let's focus now on character traits that are built into the world.
Habit, the force of habit.
Okay, the force of habit, yafeh, that we touched upon before.
Okay.
What about the fear of the unknown? Or somebody mentioned pride, ego, pride, for sure. Nobody liked admitting that they are wrong. I know Rav Noach Weinberg from Eish HaTorah tells the story of this guy from who was once a Baal Tshuva. I won't mention the name of the city. He becomes religious and he tells Rav Noach Weinberg, I know you travel around a lot, and if you ever want to come to my city to fundraise, to speak, I would love to host you in my house. So Rav Noach takes down his email address, says, thanks so much. Maybe I'll take you up on that. And it just so happens that he's coming to town. He lets him know. And I stay over at your house as you invited. And the guy says, let's call him Adam. Adam says, Rabbi, you don't understand how happy I am to have you in my house.
How is it?
Anyway, Rabbi Weinberg comes in and calls him up and says, Adam, still okay? Says, yeah, what time are you going to come? Rabbi Weinberg says, I have a lot of meetings, and I guess between 9 and 10. And Adam says, well, you can't come any earlier? Rabbi Weinberg says, well, I'm coming to town to do a lot of important work. I'll try and make it a little earlier. So Adam says to him, okay, just try and make it as early as possible. So Rabbi Weinberg thinks to himself that Adam is going to make him some kind of surprise party. He doesn't know what's going on. But he gets there, 9 o'clock, knocks at the door. Adam opens up, hugs him, says, Rabbi, you don't understand. This is the happiest day of my life. And Rabbi Weinberg says, you're right. I don't understand. What's so big? And the guy says, listen, when I was in yeshiva, you convinced me to be religious. But when I came back home, nobody in my family was convinced. I tried all the proofs. It didn't work. So I invited all my uncles and aunts and brothers and sisters here to the living room. And that's why it's so important for me that you came to my house. And even though it's a little late, Rabbi, I think you have about an hour to convince them to be religious. And Rabbi Weinberg takes him to the side and says, Adam, I don't think we ever told you this in yeshiva, but you don't have an ice cube's chance in hell of convincing a man in front of his wife, in front of his kids, that his whole life was a mistake. He's not going to admit to it because, as somebody mentioned, ego, right? We mentioned before the fear of the unknown. Fear of the unknown is a certain lack of security that I know where I am. And if I move, yeah, I might rise, but I lack my stability. Somebody mentioned laziness. Any other ideas, character traits that hold us back? Our atmosphere, peer pressure, right? Peer pressure. Since when did you become so frum, holier than thou? Since when did you change? Certain mitzvot are not accepted in certain places. And then when a person wants to start doing it, right? Also a lack of comfort, right? That we like the way that we are. It's comfortable. Now, if you think about all of these character traits, Rav Kook writes in Orot HaKodesh that God was perfect. That's the definition of a monotheistic God. He doesn't make mistakes. And therefore, when he created all of these drives or all of these traits, they are meant to be used for good. Rav Kook writes in Orot HaKodesh that there is no such thing, right? Inertia, status quo, that's definitely connected, right? There is no such thing that is inherently bad. What happens is that God created many things which are meant to be good, but if man misuses them, he has free will to turn them to bad. If somebody says, I have a yetzer hara for food, I eat too much. Well, just think for a drop. Eating is a good yetzer. Without the drive to eat, we would not be alive. But if I choose to eat too much, I am turning that good yetzer, that good drive, into a bad drive. Somebody mentioned laziness or heaviness, right? It takes calories to change. And to stay status quo is more comfortable. And that's holding me back. Why did God create us that way? Because he doesn't want us to do dangerous things. So the idea of the fear of the unknown, to be wary of instability, that is a very good drive. But don't use it to hold you back. The same thing with peer pressure. Peer pressure, you know, growing up in high school, our Rebbe's always used to say, don't give in to peer pressure, inferring that peer pressure is something negative. And then I got to yeshiva, and I found what positive peer pressure is about. And I realized that peer pressure is meant to be something good, but I can misuse it and turn it into something negative. The same thing with the ego. God didn't make a mistake when he created us with an ego. We need to feel good about ourselves. And that's really what Orot HaTshuva is about. But don't overdo it. Because if you turn that good, feeling good about yourself, into arrogance, then you have chosen to turn the Yetzer Tov into a Yetzer Ra. Getting back to source number 5. Again, this is the main source for today. I just mentioned here, let's not forget the Psukim in Dvarim Perek Lamed, that the Torah and Tshuva ki tashuv el Hashem Elokecha, it's not lo b'shamayim him, it's not in the heavens. Lo me'ivre liyami, you don't have to swim to the other side of the ocean. And ki in karov elecha davar ma'od. V'ficha u'bilvavcha la'asoto. It is in your mouth, it is in your heart, it's built into the world to want to improve. On the other hand, that's our topic for today. There are certain things which are holding us back. Ha'akshanut, the stubbornness, la'amod tamid b'deya achat, to stay in one position. Say a person is addicted to smoking. Say he's addicted to gossiping or lying or cheating. Ulitamech ba bechevle achatat, and he ties himself with the ropes of sin. Here, I mentioned last time that Rav Kook always has playing in the background certain lines from Chazal. The line here is from the Talmud. Let's look together in Source 6. Mesechet Sukkah, Daf Nun Bet Amud Aleph. Amar Avasi, Yetzer Hara betchilat dome lechut shel buchya. At the beginning, Yetzer Hara, it's like a spider's web. You make a mistake, you sin, you can cut it very easily. Ulbasov domeka votota agala. But if you repeat a mistake over and over and over, you get into a bad habit, then you have turned that thread into a rope. Shneamar as Yeshayahu Perakei says, Havi moshchei ha'avon bechevlei hashav uchevota agala chata'a. The thin ropes which can pull the chariots, they don't start out as a thin rope, as a thick rope. How do you make a rope? You take a thread and another thread and another thread and another thread until eventually that is a habit which is difficult to break. So Rav Kook is saying, be wary of bad habits. Don't be stubborn to stay in your bad habits. Don't say, I don't make mistakes. Don't be locked in by peer pressure or ego or those other things which are meant to be good, but don't misuse them to lock yourself into not improving. These ropes of sin that have become our habit, there are certain things which we get from our society. Who says that they're right? Everyone's saying the same thing. Homosexuality is a natural sexual preference, right? That's what somebody who is born and grows up today in the 21st century, that's who's, maybe it's right, maybe it's wrong, but check it out. The same thing if a person is addicted to smoking. I remember I once spent, the worst Shabbat of my life was spent at the house of somebody who was a chain smoker, and the whole Shabbat he was yelling, and he punished his children, and he yelled at me, and he yelled at his wife. And one time he went to the bathroom and his wife turns to me and my brother. We were there for Shabbat. He says, you'll have to excuse my husband, but he's a chain smoker and he gets very angry on Shabbat when he can't have a cigarette. And in a lot of communities, they have smokers minyanim, right? That they daven Mariv 10 minutes before the end of Shabbat so that they can light up the first cigarette as soon as possible. When somebody is addicted to biting their nails or waking up late, or if any action or any opinion, ki machala, when you're tying, you're binding your hands with this rope, it is a machala, it is a sickness. We'll explain in a minute. Haba mitoch shikua be'avdut kasha, which stems from being sunk into a terrible slavery. What is Rav Kook talking about sickness? Sick is unnatural. It's unhealthy. And the most natural thing for a man is to have free will. We spoke about last time the Rambam who says the definition of man, the essence of man is his free will. Stones don't have free will. Trees don't have free will. Animals don't have free will. Angels don't have free will. The only one who has free will is God, and he willed to give us free will. which means that a person who is addicted to cigarettes or to putting other people down or to bragging, he is missing out on his essence because he's not free to change. What Rav Kook is saying is that anyone who lets these things hold him back from improving, that is unnatural. That's not what life is about. We'll see a beautiful, beautiful Gemara, Masechet Nedarim, in Source 8, Daf Samech Dalid. And the Maharal is a beautiful explanation. Famous Gemara, Rashi brings all these down in his commentary on the Torah. Again, Source number 8. V'tanya arba chashuvin kemet. There are four people who are considered dead. Ani, somebody who's poor. Mitzora, somebody who was a leper, thrown out of the camp. Suma, somebody who's blind. Umisha in lo banim, somebody who doesn't have children. And then the Gemara brings different psukim to prove it. Now, today, thank God, we live in a world that we have Braille, we have seeing eye dogs, you can adopt children. Statistically, 100% of couples, in other words, more than 99.5% of couples today can have children. So today we have solutions, but nevertheless, we want to understand, what are the rabbis telling us? Chazal are telling us, what is the common denominator between these four people? The Maharal explains, they are not independent. Ani, a poor person who has to think three times before he buys a can of Coke. Right? He's not independent. Somebody who's supported by his parents or by welfare is not independent. His life is not living. In other words, Chazal are telling us that the definition of life is to be independent. The Gemara continues, Mitzora, somebody who's thrown out of the city, a leper, even if he forgot his glasses at home, he can't go and get them. Why? Because he's not allowed in the camp. He is not independent. Suma, in the olden days, a blind person needed help to cross the street. He's not independent. Misha in lo banim, in the olden days, before there was welfare, who supported a person in his old age? His children. If you didn't have children, you didn't have money. And you needed the help of others. In other words, what Chazal are telling us is that if you want to understand what life is about being independent, free will. Now, why is this so important? Because we all know, the Ramchal writes about this in Sefer Derech Hashem, life is about to be godly. Now, God is the most independent being that there is. God does whatever he wants, however he wants, whenever he wants. Now, when man becomes independent, we are becoming more godly. When I am in charge of my destiny and I am strong enough to rise above my ego and peer pressure and fear of the unknown and all of the things that are holding me back, that strength to overcome, that is a godly drive. Because again, God is totally free. He has totally free will. He willed to give man free will. And if man is locked into a certain place and doesn't let himself improve, he doesn't flow with the tide, that is a sickness. That is not natural. That's not living. Because again, what is the definition of living according to the Maharal, according to Chazal in Source number 8? Living is somebody who is independent. By the way, here is another example of where we see another reason why Rav Kook was a Zionist. Because the most natural thing is just for the individual to be independent. Don't tell me what to do. Democracy is part of the maturing of mankind. Be who you want to be. Don't let others tell you who to be. So too, it's unnatural for the Jewish people to live under a foreign law. or a foreign influence or a foreign atmosphere that tells us, that influences us to be something that we don't want to be, right? Brainwashing, Rav Kook is saying, that is not natural, because we are meant to think, we are meant to choose, we are meant to improve. And don't let any of these things hold us back. Another aspect of this, this theme is one of the central themes of Rav Kook's commentary on the Haggadah of Pesach. Obviously, Zman Chirutenu, the holiday of our freedom, is a time to celebrate what freedom is about. What is freedom? To be yourself. Let's look together in source 9, where Rav Kook adds on a very unique way, aspect of looking at freedom. Source number 9. B'yot ha'adam kol kach ben chorin. When a person is so free, ad shiuchal b'chiruto ha'muchlek, so much so that his total freedom, again, he rises above all those things that are holding him back, to be who he wants to be, gam ken l'shabed atzmo b'makom ha'ra'ui. He is so free that he can even, he has the self-discipline to hold himself back from certain pleasures, from certain actions that he doesn't want to do. That is the guy who is totally free. V'liyot eved b'makom she'avduti acherut amitit. Al tira avdi Yaakov. Rav Kook uses this pasuk, saying, don't be scared, my servant Yaakov. Yaakov is Israel. And people have a tendency to be scared to be servants of God. We want freedom. Rav Kook is explaining, based on Chazal I brought for you in the source in Pirkei Avot in source 12, Ein lecha ben chorin ala mi she'osek batorah. The freest person in the world is somebody who learns Torah. Now, I think anybody and everyone who ever learned this is puzzled with the obvious question. If you want to say that somebody who learns Torah is smart, I understand. You want to say he's godly, you want to say he's idealistic, you want to say he's sharp. You can say a lot of things about somebody who learns Torah, but why say that he is free? And now you catch what Rav Kook is doing this with this. True freedom is that somebody is so free that he can decide when to go, when to do, and when to withhold. When to eat the cheeseburger and want not to eat. And he is the master of his faith. I'm sure most of you have heard of the famous marshmallow test. I think it was done in Stanford University in the 60s, where it's called marshmallow test because that's what most of, they offer the kids to either a pretzel, a candy or a marshmallow. And most of the children chose marshmallows. And they were told that if you can contain yourself and just look at this marshmallow for 10 minutes, then we will give you a second marshmallow. In other words, it's worth to have that self-discipline. And there was a hidden camera. By the way, you can find this on YouTube. It's really funny to see these kids struggling with their Yetzer Hara. And I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was something like 40% were able to overcome and get that second marshmallow. But the majority of these 6-7-year-olds, they weren't able to do it. And they just went for that first marshmallow, for that instant gratification, for what I feel like as opposed to what I really want. And the most interesting part is that in the 90s, maybe the beginning of the 2000s, they followed up these kids and they found that those 35-year-olds, who had that self-discipline already when they were younger, they were so much more disproportionately more successful in their fields, their work, their studies, socially, marriage. Because what is marriage about? That I'm willing to give up for my spouse. That is a self-discipline which lets me rise to a higher level of godliness, of freedom, of being who I want to be. An immature child will always go for the immediate pleasure. But somebody who is godly, somebody who is mature, he utilizes his free will to do what he really wants. Rav Kook says this beautifully, and also in his commentary on the Haggadah, regarding Korech. Where is Korech? Source number 15. What is Korech? That's the sandwich. We all remember in the Seder of Pesach that we take the matzah and we take the maror, the bitter herbs, and we eat them together as a sandwich. Rav Kook explains, Al kenat surash lema shel acherut ba biyota nichrechet im ha'avdut. If you really want freedom, first, you need to go down to Egypt for 200 years. You have to know what it is for slavery. You have to know what self-discipline is, that I can't do just whatever I want whenever I want. After I have that discipline, then I can really be a free man. That's why we need the bitter herbs together with the matzah. She'az yimatzei adam b'nafsho ha'shiltona gamur ha'ro'i l'bin chorin be'emet. Who is a true free man? Hamoshel gamken ala gadol shebakochot. Somebody who is so free that he even rules over the strongest of drives. Shukoach hachirut atzmo. That is the drive for freedom itself. Somebody who is so free that he even can control his freedom to eat what he wants, and not just to go after his yetzer hara, to wear what he wants. And what he wants to express and follow the Shulchan Aruch to be godly and to live the godly ideals, to be who he wants to be and not to be held back by fashions, by peer pressure, by ego. This person is really free. Now, what does the matzah together with the maror represent? Matzah, this is a famous maharal, but let's see the source of the maharal in the Gemara. In Masechet Brachot, where is Masechet Brachot? Source number 13. The Gemara tells us that there were a lot of rabbis who used to add a personal prayer at the end of the Amidah. And that's where Elokein Yetzor comes from, that we say at the end of our Amidah, everyone says it today. That is where Tfilat Rav, of Birkat HaChodesh, that's where that comes from. Rabbi Alexandri Butter Damatzli, his personal prayer that he added at the end of davening, Amar Hachi does what he said, Ribon Olamim, God, Master of the Worlds, Galui V'Yadua Lifanecha Sheretzonenu La'asot Retzonecha. You know very well that we want to do what you want us to do. So what's holding us back? Right, that's our topic today. If we want to improve and God wants us to improve, as the most natural thing to improve. So what's holding us back? Umim me'akev, what's holding us back from improving? Se'or shebe'isa, yeast, the chametz. Rashi explains, yetzer hara shebilvavenu, hamachmitzenu. The yetzer hara is symbolized by yeast. Why? Because yeast changes us from our essence. The essence of flour and water in its simplest essential form is matzah. But if you add yeast, you have changed it. That also represents the arrogance or the ego, the inflation, where we lose our real selves. Vishibud malchuyot, being under foreign rule, where the goyim tell us, you can do this, you can't do that. Soviet Russia, they didn't let us put up mezuzot, they didn't let us do brit milah. Foreign influence, living in a non-Jewish country where everyone is influencing us and we are open to foreign influences. Rav Kook says, that's how he explains the Gemara in Masechet Brachot. This is what's holding us back. What's the common denominator between chametz and foreign governments, galut? The common denominator is they don't let us be who we want to be. yeast changes our essence. The Yetzer Hara, that's what we saw last week. Remember we saw in Orot HaKodesh when Rav Kook explains that when Hashem, God, turns to Adam, after he ate the forbidden fruit, and he says to Adam, Ayeka, where are you? All right, God sees everything. He knows very well where Adam is. Rav Kook explains, Ayeka, where is the real you? Why did you listen to the snake? Why aren't you independent? Why do you give in to others? Don't let them hold you back. Don't let any of these powers, which God created to be used in the right time, in the right place, but don't let them hold us back. There's a famous guru of the 1960s, Eric Fromm. And I grew up in the late 60s, early 70s, at a time where we had friends whose parents let them go to sleep whenever they want, didn't make them go to school, didn't make them do their homework, at least in Riverdale. I don't know how it was in all around. But in liberal communities, a lot of my friends just did whatever they want. They didn't have any red lines. And then Eric Fromm wrote another book in the 70s called Escape from Freedom, where he basically says, I was talking about freedom, not anarchy. The hippie movement brought a lot of anarchy instead of freedom. What Judaism wants is freedom. What does it mean, freedom? That you have the self-discipline to pass the marshmallow test, to be who you want to be, to contain yourself. Don't just run after your eyes. Don't run after your Yetzer Hara. Remember Moshe Katsav, president of Israel? He worked his entire life, his entire career. He was the mayor. By the way, he lost the first election. That was a down. And then he became mayor. Then he became member of Knesset. Then he became Tsar, minister. Then he became president. And he blew his entire career by, raping his secretary. Now, if you were to ask him beforehand, would that be a smart move for 10 minutes of pleasure to ruin 45 years of work? He would say, no, that's a really stupid thing to do. If you were to ask him today, wasn't that pretty stupid? He would say, yeah, those 7 years I spent in jail and that public embarrassment, that ruined my whole career. That was pretty stupid. For 10 minutes, he was not himself. And that's what Rav Kook is saying. Let's go back to source number 5 and summarize our paragraph. Again, even though it's the most natural thing to want to improve, the stubbornness that we have to lock ourselves into certain actions, certain opinions, whether they be because of ego or fear of the unknown or peer pressure or any of these other things, they should not hold me back from being who I want to be. He machala, a person who doesn't have free will, he is missing out on life, because life is about being independent, being free will. The more free you are, the more godly you are, the less animalistic you are. Shakua be'avdut kasha, a person who doesn't have free will to rise to be who he wants to be, he is like a slave, who someone's telling him, do this, do that, do this, do that. He's not free. Nebuch, a person who's addicted to something and doesn't let himself be free, he is like a slave, voluntary slavery. She'ina menicha et or ha-chirut shel ha-tshuva, because this slavery, this lack of freedom, this lack of independence, this lack of godliness, this lack of life, is holding him back and doesn't let the or ha-chirut, the light of freedom, to shine, the freedom of tshuva, to light up the world with all of its strength. Wouldn't the world be a great place if everyone were to be free and to be who they want to be? Because we all know what we should be doing. Let's just do it. Ki atshuva hi shoefet lechofesh mikori amiti. We want to be free. Judaism is not against freedom. Judaism is for freedom. And the idea of the Torah mitzvot is to mishachrer, to free us from different yitzarim which are holding us back, to run here, run there, go after this, go after that, in order to be godly. God in his Torah, in his guide for living, tells us how we can be godly, how we can be independent, how we can be free. And one of the ways is what to eat and what not to eat, what to say, what not to say, what to wear, what not to wear. So that a Jew is taught, educated from a very young age to have the koresh, the matzah and the maror. Again, matzah symbolizes the essence. Without yeast, your true self, together with maror, which is the bitterness, which represents the slavery, that sometimes we have to tell ourselves, no, hold back. I'll just finish off with an anecdote. There was a girl in my class in elementary school, very bright girl, and she was a very, very professional figure skater. And we used to laugh at her that she went to bed, she went to sleep at 8 o'clock, and she had this very strict diet, and she couldn't do this, and she couldn't go there, and everything she wasn't allowed to do. And eventually, she grew up, she was the valedictorian of Yale University, and because she had the key of self-discipline, which is helpful not only to get to the Olympics, but also to be myself, to be independent, to be godly. Any questions or comments? Natan Sharansky said that he was free while in solitary because his mind was his own. Yeah, fair. As a matter of fact, I have written down to mention that, but can't get around to everything. But there's a famous Yosef Mendelevich said something also when he was given his, before being sentenced at the kangaroo court. If you remember, he and a couple of other Jews planned to hijack a Russian jet to fly out of the Soviet Union. And he was asked, you know, to make his last statement. He said to the judge, I know that you are going to sentence me to Siberia or death or whatever it was. But he says, you should know that I am more free than you are, because Big Brother tells you what to think and what to judge. I do what I want to do. Yes, that very important point. Okay, let's go through the chats.
We'll go back up to Sivan if you want to start at the beginning at 1:18 p.m. Asking you a question from last week. If you want to quickly go through that, if you see that.
I see 8:03.
Oh, 8:03. Well, okay. I would go to 8:18, I think.
What? Yeah. You don't have 8:03?
First of all, I'm 7 hours behind you.
Okay.
I know, and this is your private comment. The first one I have is the Sivan. In the previous session, you mentioned that tshuva works by removing the deed from the timeline. Maybe you want to do it at the end from last week. So after tshuva, it's almost like wrong action did not happen. Could you elaborate on that?
Okay. The idea is that it really is illogical to change something that's been done. If a person murders his friend, he's dead. You can't bring him back to life. That's the way this world works, because we live in a world of time. On the other hand, God created time. He's not bound by time. And in God's book and in the book of Tshuva, we can truly redo things. And again, just like the Chafetz Chaim said, that modern inventions help us understand how this metaphysical world runs. The fact that we have an erase button, we can stop, go back, erase, right? This is a very illogical way of thinking, but Judaism believes very strongly in it. Okay, let's go back to the first comment. Rabbi, it doesn't seem to me that human nature has changed for thousands of years. I won't go through all of last class, but just the examples that we gave. Today, almost everybody knows that slavery is wrong, racism is wrong, chauvinism is wrong. And yes, it's very gradual, but because it's an important
thing. Have slavery now, we have racism now, all those things. We had Nazis, 6 million
There's
people.
No comparison. With the racism there was in the 60s, and no comparison with the
world,
racism that there was
world,
in the 18th century. And that's
I'm
the point
sorry,
that
I'm
we
not,
said.
I'm not really, I'm seeing the... I see some improvement.
The world is constantly improving, but there's an arrow at the top. Nobody is naive to think that the world is perfect. But if you compare the racism today with racism when I was growing up, when you had separate water fountains for blacks and whites, and there's no comparison. And there's no comparison with 100 years before when the blacks were slaves. And there's no comparison. Bekitsur, mankind has matured. Yes, there is a little slavery here. Yes, there are still racists every now and then, but everybody knows that it's wrong. Yes, there are chauvinists here and there, but everybody knows that it's wrong.
Trafficking of women, what's Taliban, what's going on all over the world? I'm not sure. I don't see an improvement. I hope that you
wait a minute.
Again, I think the examples that I gave speak for themselves, that a world that today sits down and talks about their problems before fighting, yes, there are Muslim fanatics. Yes, the world is not ideal. Of course.
Look at the most intelligent people.
Take a step back and see how much the world has improved, and I think it speaks for itself.
I also think there's a distinction. I think what's bothering people is, of course, the things between the Western world, you know, Europe. If you look to Europe and North America, the improvement is unbelievable. If you look at other parts of the world, it's not the same way. But even there, I think, you know, when people say that the Taliban are 16th century or whatever, you know, whatever, that's better than in the third century, I guess. But yes, you're right. It's both. I think if I can say I but there's no doubt in the West where we've improved much. That's for sure. I don't think anybody can argue that. Despite all the problems with racism in America and et cetera, we're still much better than it once was.
I think anybody here who was alive in the 60s knows that there's totally no comparison. Also regarding chauvinism. And sometimes you look back at old I Love Lucy reruns and or the Flintstones, and you see where the role of women was in the 1960s. It's laughable how much man has and women have advanced. Okay, I think you mean fail, nichshal, remember? Arrogance, yafeh, we mentioned that. Pride, stubbornness, insecurity, yafeh, all these we mentioned. Feeling stuck could prevent someone feeling it won't make any difference. Feeling if it doesn't work, are all human feelings. Yafeh. And again, what Rav Kook is saying is that is one of the things that we have to overcome to let ourselves be who we want to be. Lack of comfort, inertia. Every cloud has a silver lining, but the individual needs to fully realize what they are doing is bad. Against the word of Hashem, right? Definitely. That's what Harata is about, right? There are four steps of tshuva. One of them is to realize Hakarat HaChet and regretting what you did, accepting that you're not going to do it again, paying back the money, saying vidui, saying I will not, and then it all has to be sincere. Uh-huh. Not improving. Oh, I like that. That's a pun on the words for the chevlei chatat. Serious addiction. 10 to 15% of couples are infertile. Don't blame the victim. Okay? Of course, we're not blaming anyone. But we have to thank God for the fact. I think I mentioned this once when we're talking about the redemption, that in the PUA Institute, they told me, I asked, and they said that 90% of couples that used to be thought of infertile today, through surrogate babies, test tube babies, surrogate mothers, right, whatever the means, can conceive. And we have to thank God. And even if one person in the world still is left out, obviously that hurts. Nevertheless, we have to thank God for the advancement that has been made. One could say that yeast improves flour and water, for sure. Yeast, all year round, we eat chametz. Nevertheless, in the Beit HaMikdash, chametz was usually not allowed. Because the idea is, and that's how the Sefer HaChinuch explains it, that we should ideally, and that's what the Beit HaMikdash, the Holy Temple, is about, be ourselves. Yes, there's nothing wrong with bettering your standard of living, and eating a more tasty bread. Nevertheless, Pesach is the holiday where we eat matzah to remember what Chirut is about. Anybody who wants to choose to eat matzah all year round, I know somebody who does that. That's it. You're free to do that. If you want to eat bread, you're free to do that. But the main thing is that you are free to do what you want. 10 minutes is being generous.
About katsir.
Sorry? Oh.
That was a comment made about katsir.
Okay, well, that Moshe Katsav. Okay, maybe that was the only time that he was caught. Okay, that's not our topic today. Just an example. Natan Sharansky mentioned. Free to follow out, but I hope everybody caught the example of Moshe Katsav, right? That he was not free to be who he wanted to be when he followed his Yetzer Hara. And that is Ayeka. Where is the real you? Free to follow out on our own conscience, or free to follow a God as mediated by rabbis, which is freer? Oh, that is a big topic. And maybe if Rabbi Kelman invites me to give a series on Rav Kook's commentary on the Haggadah, maybe we'll talk about. That's obviously one step deeper than what...
We're going to have to leave that for another time.
Right. Right. We mentioned that. That was in the Pirkei Avot, in source number... Where was it?
Yeah, that's it. That's that's
right. Source number 12. So the idea is somebody can say, well, a Reform Jew or somebody who's totally no red lines, does whatever he wants, whenever he wants, however he wants, he seems to be more free. Well, that is exactly what Rav Kook is explaining, the difference between anarchy and freedom. And that's what the whole topic was about. Anarchy is when you do whatever you feel like. Freedom is that you pass the marshmallow test. You have the self-discipline to be godly, to be who you want to be. Can you comment on the seeming contradiction between the notion of freedom to do whatever I want and the adherence of the authority of halakha? Well, that's exactly what we're talking about. By the way, if the question is about rabbinic law, we're not Karaites, and we know that it says in the Torah that there is a need also for the oral law and also for the interpretation of the rabbis in each and every generation. Otherwise, we will not be one religion. We will not have one Torah, but everyone will do whatever they feel like it, and that really will not be true Judaism. The truth is, we spoke about once, if you remember, what is true Judaism? To bring all of the different opinions, the 71 top geniuses, into the Sanhedrin. They argue back and forth, as Jews and rabbis know very well how to do. And then they bring it up to a vote. And that, what is the vote about? What is the best way to be productive, to be godly, to be independent? That's exactly what the rabbis are meant to do. Unfortunately, we don't have a Sanhedrin yet. And today, it's much easier just to say no, no, no. And that's why maybe some people feel a lack of freedom. And it's true that when there was a Sanhedrin, well, there will be a Sanhedrin, Judaism is going to be a lot easier. That's without a doubt. The arrow going up needs a standard deviation emarcation. What's an emarcation? I apologize. I've been in Israel for 40 years. My English isn't so polished. Can somebody help me out with that?
I would if I could. Deviation, emar. I mean, I know it, the stand demarcation. I'm not sure what. Standard deviation, demarcation. One standard deviation, two standard deviations, 68%, 95%, but I don't know the context. Okay, but we can, unless you want to explain.
Racism of young based on genetics. Yeah. And that's why it was worse than it is today. One of the reasons. Slavery, tribalism, and racism were normal thousands of years ago. It is not that it exists. It is that it was normal. Right? And that's the point. That thank God mankind has matured and we know that it's not normal. Study history. Read Thomas Sowell. Okay. I see I have a lot of homework today. But does he agree? Does he disagree? What does anybody know? Does Arthur Stein want to enlighten us on that one? Somebody else?
He is very good. He has been very good at actually doing real academic work to show what is true as opposed to what people believe is true, think is true. It's well worth reading his books. It's well worth listening to some of his lectures and interviews. One can learn a great deal about this topic of what used to be true and what is really true today in the world.
Thank you. Very good. How does Rav Kook address the concept of Yiridata Dorot in terms of the world constantly improving? Fantastic question. Rav Kook answers that explicitly, and he explains that Yiridata Dorot, which literally means the lessening, that every generation that we're further away from Har Mount Sinai is on a lower level. And that's why Amoraim, who wrote the Gemara, cannot disagree with those Tanaim, who wrote the Mishnah. And why Rishonim dare disagree with the Amoraim, and Achronim generally don't disagree with Rishonim. That explains Rav Kook is referring to the Torah world, the rabbinic world, where, no, we don't have a Moshe Rabbeinu anymore. We don't have a Yeshayahu anymore. We don't have a Rambam anymore. We don't even have a Chavetz Chaim. We don't even have a Moshe Feinstein anymore. We don't have a Mordechai Eliyahu anymore. So the Torah world, as it furthers from Sinai, is going down. On the other hand, Rav Kook says, if you look at the masses, again, this is an example. I don't know if you people, most people might not even know. Before the Renaissance, most Gentiles in the world did not know how to read or write. Jewish people always knew how to read or write. But most people in the world did not know how to read and write. That is a relatively new phenomenon. And the masses today are more intellectual. They're more idealistic. They have different ideologies. And many, many people, the masses, for example, women are learning Torah. People who never could have learned Torah before today, there are different frameworks for them, different yeshivot for them. So Rav Kook explains that the masses are rising as the rabbis are sinking. And part of the idea is for in our generation, we are meant to meet where the religious leadership should be on the same wavelength as the masses. Because if the Rambam were around today, we wouldn't know what to do with him, and he probably wouldn't know what to do with us. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chazal tells us he plants religious leadership, which is suitable, which is fitting for each generation in each respective generation. So that, yes, the religious leadership is going down, and part of the idea is so that they are more approachable and more understandable because the masses are rising. Glad we got a chance to clarify. Good question. Even now we are aware of the harm to the First Nations. It's come away.
That's for the Canadians here, what's going on here with the First Nations.
Should I understand that?
It's been in the papers around the world, I think. Discovery of the way, we'll leave it for now, but the way Canadians, the government and the Catholic Church treated the indigenous people who are trying to uproot and destroy their culture. And in recent weeks, thousands really of bodies have been found, you know, people died there, whatever. It's all big. Canada's trying to, I mean, for years it's been an issue, but now it's like sort of hit us in the face and trying to reconciliation and do more to, you know, heal some of the wounds that have not healed. But that's, it's a very Canadian issue now.
Okay. There is far more anti-Semitism now than there was in the 60s. I think people don't know very much about Europe. Okay, again, we explained that all of life is slow but sure advancement. Sometimes it's at this rate, sometimes it's at this rate. And there are a lot of ups and downs on the way. And anti-Semitism is for sure a very serious down. But I hope that the anti-Semites will mature and grow out of it. Just like I imagine that if we compare anti-Semitism today with where it was 100 years ago, I'd imagine that on the whole, there are probably less anti-Semites than there were 100 years ago. Nevertheless, the arrow is still open because the world is not perfect. And you know what? The world will never be perfect. Maybe we'll learn about that. That perfection is the strive for perfection. It's to be on that arrow. Okay, the Torah seems to be written for the same human nature of thousands of years, right? That's part of the beauty of the Torah. Exactly. Mankind's nature does not change. And if anybody wants to see, there's a relatively popular class that I gave on YU Torah about mitzvot that seem outdated, and also deals with the issue of questions regarding women's rights and Amalek and things like that. You could just Google YU Torah, Ari Shvat, and look for mitzvot outdated, which deals with that. You seem to be giving the guy who raped the secretary an out by saying he could not help himself. No way. Correct. He was not himself. That is not an excuse. And God knows how to judge people like that. Nevertheless, it's a good example. Thank you, Rabbi Shvat and Rabbi Jay. Oh, very nice demarcation. It needs error bars. Deb Schubach, would you like to explain that?
That's what's just on this, on the standard deviation from before, but that's what she was referring to.
Okay.
Demarcation.
Okay. Yes, about literacy of Jews for many, many years, unlike the literacy level of those who are not Jewish. Correct. By the way, there was a point where many Jewish women did not know to read and to write. Today, everybody does. Again, another example of the improvement. The United States also is coming to grips with the treatment of indigenous populations. For those like the American Indians, probably somebody told me, they don't call them, what are they called today?
I've been indigenous. Away for 40 years. That's what we're talking about. The indigenous, that's what we call them.
Native, they're not called Native Americans?
Native Americans.
Oh, maybe. And then in Canada, we call them indigenous people, I think. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
We call them First Nations.
First Nations, yeah. Also the right. First Nations, yeah. They were here first. Okay, it's late. We're going to let our Rabbi Shvati has to go to bed soon. Has to get ready for Shabbos. I don't know when you go to bed, but okay. Anyways, thank you. Okay.
It's
6 hours. A pleasure
seeing
you. We'll see you next week.
If I can ask, it's a pleasure when people have their cameras on. I'm getting to know even some of the faces, and that's that much nicer.
Right. So, I agree. We don't push the issue. Many people are not comfortable, but it's always nice for the speakers. The speakers like it very much. And if people put on their faces, I agree. But that's everybody, you know, Isha Yashar Bein Avyasa. You know, we're
into freedom.
We're not in, it's not in high school here. When I taught last year, you know, on Zoom, of course, the rule was the kids had to have their face, their cameras on, but doesn't quite work that way in adult education. Okay.
That was our
charge
topic.
The kids $25,000 and make them show their camera. You know, here it's anyway.
That was our topic. Our topic tonight is freedom. People do whatever.
Isha Yashar. Okay. In 6 hours and 6 minutes, please God, Rabbi Seth Grauer will be giving our Parshat HaShavuot here, the Rosh Hashiva and Head of School of Bnei Akiva Yeshivot here in Toronto, formerly of New York, Fifth Avenue Synagogue and Ramaz. Tomorrow, my shiur, Perkei Avot at 9:30, and all our shiurim next week. And we look forward to learning with you. And please invite a friend to come, a friend who hasn't experienced Torah in motion yet. Invite them to come to one of our shiurim. And we look forward to learning with you and your friends. And everybody have a wonderful next 6 hours and 6 minutes. Okay, for those who can make it. I assume you will be asleep by 3:30 a.m., Rabbi Shvat. Okay, so those in Israel, yes. Okay, have a good day, everybody. Thank you. Bye-bye.